Good morning. Thank you all for coming today to share the Dharma and to take part in our preparation for Jukhai. If there's any piece of our annual Buddhist calendar that could be called the High Holy Days, that's where we are now. Last Thursday, we had a ceremony of aid in connection with the fast for a world harvest. This Thursday, this week, is Thanksgiving. And we'll have a ceremony of gratitude. Next Sunday, we will have Jukhai, the taking of the precepts. And in December, there is the Rohatsu Sesshin, the 7-day Sesshin that commemorates the Buddha's enlightenment. In Jukhai, we formally commit ourselves to the Buddha's teachings as put forth in the precepts. So traditionally, this is a teisho on the precepts. If you are contemplating taking Jukhai next week, please consider seriously. Jukhai is not a pro forma ritual. The precept should be taken only after some serious thought about whether one is willing to sincerely try to practice them. Now, doubt about one's ability to abide by the precepts is not a barrier. We all have doubts. We all fail. But we keep trying, and that's the crux. Are you willing to fail? Pick yourself up, give it another shot, and another, and another. There are 16 precepts. There are the three refuges. I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha. There are the three general resolutions. I resolve to avoid evil. I resolve to practice all good dharmas. I resolve to save the many beings. And then there are the 10 grave precepts. Not to kill, not to steal, not to engage in improper sex, not to lie, not to give or take drugs, not to discuss the faults of others, not to praise oneself or abuse others, not to withhold spiritual or material aid, not to indulge in anger, and not to defame the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So there they are. Any questions? These are considered to be the moral and ethical aspects of the Buddha's teaching. Buddhist ethics. What does that mean? Is there really any such thing? Well, I have a book at home titled, oddly enough, Buddhist Ethics. It goes into a minutely detailed analysis of every conceivable situation and contingency from the Buddhist standpoint. What is acceptable? What is not? What is questionable? And so on and on and on. And it is filled with quotes from scriptures and commentaries. And therefore, it misses the point completely. Our Buddha nature is one and indivisible. The deep realization of this fact is called prajna, transcendent wisdom. Prajna wisdom goes beyond distinctions of man, woman, ignorance, enlightenment, good, evil. In prajna, we see that from the very beginning, all beings are Buddha, and that Buddha comes forth as all beings. And thus we see the true nature of other people, of things, and ourselves. If we attach to notions of good and evil, right and wrong, that is itself a turning away from this prajna wisdom, from our true nature, our original mind. Knowledge of good and evil is not knowledge about anything, but only superimposed judgments made by the separated ego self. It is just picking and choosing among possibilities, all of which are empty and illusory. To know good and evil is to set oneself apart, outside. In the verse on the faith mind, Sung Tsang writes, "If there's a trace of right and wrong, true mind is lost, confused, distraught." Zen Master Yue Lin comments on a case in the Wu Men Guan. "Those who come talking about right and wrong are themselves right and wrong people. How true are these words? Sport with things, unconcerned with their names." Be unconcerned with names, moral judgments, or opinions about right, wrong, good, evil. Any of these is a closing off, a limitation on the unlimited self. The precepts are not a bunch of rules and regs to be obeyed. They are not some standard against which we must constantly compare ourselves. But if we can't look upon them as moral or ethical teachings in the usual way, then what are they? What do we do with them? Why do we study them, vow to accord with them? The precepts are practice. They are the practice of the liberated mind, the practice of liberation itself. The precepts are the most precise expression that can be put into words of the enlightened mind and its function. To practice the precepts is to practice our essential Buddha nature, that which we are and have always been. The practice is the one thing that can never be taken away from us. So, let's examine as best we can this practice, this enlightenment. First, we take the three refuges, that is, refuge in the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The three refuges are not three separate things. They are three ways of looking at the same reality. What is a refuge? It is a safe haven, a sanctuary, a shelter. What is it that makes anything, a place, a refuge? It has to be a complete and deep sense of trust that this is indeed a safe haven. To take refuge, therefore, is to take a leap of faith. It cannot be something that comes out of a calculation or cost-benefit analysis. But neither is it a leap of blind faith. It has to come out of some level of direct experience. That's why I think that you have to have been practicing at least a little while to take the precepts. Because you have to be willing to take this leap of faith and to take it with eyes wide open. I take refuge in Buddha. To take refuge in Buddha is to have faith in your own innate Buddha nature, your own perfection that is beyond perfection. To take refuge in Buddha is to take refuge in the practice in which you express and realize this nature. I take refuge in Dharma. To take refuge in Dharma is to have faith in the way things are and in the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors. To take refuge in Dharma is to take refuge in the practice through which we realize the true Dharma teaching that is not and was never separate from ourselves. I take refuge in Sangha. To take refuge in Sangha is to have faith that all beings are whole and complete, and each being, all that breathes and does not breathe, is the full expression of this Buddha nature. To take refuge in Sangha is to take refuge in the practice through which we realize that from the very beginning, all beings are by nature Buddha. To take refuge in these three treasures is to take refuge in our own practice and realization. Then we have the three general resolutions: to avoid evil, to practice all good dharmas, and to save the many beings. What is it to resolve? To resolve is defined as an act of determination, an act of will. But more than that, to resolve is to dispel doubts. To resolve is to attain to the Tao of no doubt. Now, doubt in itself is not a bad thing. We all have doubts. We wonder if we are good enough, if our practice is sincere enough, if our faith is strong enough. But that's all mental gymnastics. Action cuts through all doubts. You may be sitting there wondering, am I really sincere enough to be doing this? Am I good enough? Let me point out something. You are sitting right here, right now. What greater resolution can there be? How can you not be good enough? Where in your sitting, your actual sitting, is there any room whatever for doubt? Now, you may have noticed that the resolutions bring up the matter of good and evil. What in our Buddhist practice and tradition do we mean by those terms, which in English are so loaded down with cultural and emotional baggage? The Sanskrit words that are usually translated as good and evil are kusala and akusala. Kusala literally means useful, wholesome, intelligent, beneficial, skillful, that which removes affliction. Akusala means the opposite, unwholesome, unskillful, harmful, and so on. The words are not about good and evil in any moral or cosmic sense as we normally think of them. The Buddha said many times in many ways, those doctrines that lead to passion, to bondage and attachment, to desire for worldly fame or fortune, to greed, to discontent, to sloth, are not the discipline, not the master's message. That is, they are akusala. But those doctrines that lead to dispassion, to non-attachment, to frugality, to content, to solitude, to energy, are the discipline. That is, they are kusala. far from being moral or ethical considerations as we usually think of them, these terms are entirely pragmatic. In other words, they are about practice. This is the Buddha's emphasis on the practical, the doable, and ultimately the reliance upon one's own direct experience. To speak of something as good in this sense is like saying this is a good knife. It's sharp. It cuts cleanly. This is not a moral judgment. It is simply a statement of experience of that knife. Or if we say the milk has gone bad, that doesn't mean the milk has suddenly become evil. It simply is no longer wholesome or safe to drink. This may seem mundane, dry, maybe even heartless. But tell me, of what use is obsession with a concept of an unattainable cosmic good or with a concept of an irredeemable cosmic evil? This is akusala, a useless exercise that leads on the one hand to pride and on the other to despair. I resolve to avoid evil. I resolve to avoid those practices and activities that I know to be unskillful, not useful, harmful to myself and others. I resolve to practice all good dharmas. I resolve to practice those practices and activities that I know to be skillful, useful, beneficial, helpful to myself and others. I resolve to save the many beings. This is the great goal of our bodhisattva practice. And oddly enough, it's the one we really don't have to worry about. If we take the steps, if we practice correctly, the goal will appear by itself. Our practice is itself resolution. To resolve is to do exactly and fully what you are doing right here, right now. In the zazen of this infinite here and this eternal now, evil does not arise. All good dharmas are practiced, and the many beings are saved. And as we continue our practice, we see more clearly. Our resolution grows stronger, and our doubts are increasingly dispelled. But that is not enough. We cannot limit ourselves to refuges and resolutions on the mat. We must bring forth this condition, this resolution, off the mat and into the world outside these 18-inch thick walls, the world of time, space, and karma. To actualize our resolution in the cauldron of everyday life, the flames of the marketplace, we look to the 10 grave precepts, the marks of good character. Not to kill, not to steal, not to engage in improper sex, not to lie, not to give or take drugs, not to discuss the faults of others, not to praise oneself or abuse others, not to withhold spiritual or material aid, not to indulge in anger, not to defame the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Now, most of us here grew up hearing about the Ten Commandments, all of which begin with, "Thou shalt not." Sometimes we have trouble with this. So let's look a little farther. The Buddha said, "The truth realized by the realized one has neither reality nor unreality." Wei Nung comments, "There is no way to reach this truth without cultivating conduct detached from forms and appearances." Robert Aitken Roshi calls enlightenment the deportment of Buddhas. The practice of the precepts, therefore, is the cultivation of this conduct detached from forms and appearances. In this practice of our nature, notions of good and evil as metaphysical realities do not enter in. In the liberated mind, there is no killing, stealing, exploitive sex, no lying, no use of drugs, fault-finding, self-praise or abuse, no stinginess, no holding to anger, and no defaming of the three treasures. The precepts might read like a bunch of prohibitions, but to prohibit or proscribe something is to imply that one is actually capable of doing it. The Buddha said, "One who is an arhat, one in whom the mental defilements are destroyed, one who has lived the life, one who has done the task, who has laid down the burden, who has reached their own welfare, who has utterly destroyed the bond that binds to becoming, who is released by the knowledge, such a one is incapable of behaving in 9 ways, to wit, of intentionally taking the life of a creature, of taking by way of theft what is not given, of practicing the sexual act, of telling a deliberate lie, of indulging in intoxicants, of storing up for the indulgence of appetite, of going on the wrong path through hatred, of going on the wrong path through delusion, of going on the wrong path through fear." Now, the behaviors listed here are slightly different, and they are addressed to celibate monks. But I think we get the idea. The truly enlightened one is incapable of violating the precepts. It is that incapability, that failure, that is our complete freedom. The failure is wonderful indeed. The freedom of the killer, the thief, the rapist, is in fact the basest sort of slavery. It is to be completely in the thrall of the winds of capricious desire, hatred, and fear. When we say, no killing, this is not a command or a commandment. It is not a metaphysical statement. It is a statement about liberation. To be incapable is to be free from any thought, concept, or intention of an act that violates the precepts. To be free of such thoughts is not to say that such thoughts don't arise, but one is not bound in any way by them. One sees them as bubbles on the sea. This liberated mind is inherently joyful. How can liberation be otherwise? So let's look at the precepts one by one as joyous liberation. No killing. To be incapable of killing is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of killing. In the mind of no killing, all beings are whole and sufficient. All life, all beings come forth and flourish, free from birth and death. No stealing. To be incapable of stealing is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of stealing. In the mind of no stealing, all beings are whole and sufficient, free from want and desire. No exploitive sex. To be incapable of exploitive sex is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of sexual exploitation or self-gratification. In the mind of no exploitive sex, all beings are secure and at peace, free of attachment and fear. No lying. To be incapable of lying is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of lying. In the mind of no lying, everything is true. Everything is real. All beings are free of snares and entanglements. No giving or taking drugs. To be incapable of giving or taking drugs is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of giving or taking drugs. In the mind of no giving or taking of drugs, all beings thrive in complete clarity, free of darkness. No speaking of faults. To be incapable of finding fault is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of fault finding. In the mind of no fault finding, all beings are perfect, beyond perfection, free of blemish, free of dust. No praising oneself or abusing others. To be incapable of self-praise and abuse of others is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of self-praise and abuse of others. In the mind of no self-praise or abuse of others, all beings are one being, in harmony, free of gossip and discord. No withholding of spiritual or material aid. To be incapable of withholding the Dharma assets is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of stinginess. In the mind of no stinginess, all beings are open and kind and generous, free of clinging. No indulgence in anger. To be incapable of indulging in anger is to be free from any thought, concept, compulsion, or intention of indulging in anger. In the mind of no indulgence in anger, all beings are empty of self, calm and free of passion, grudges, or vindictiveness. No defaming the three treasures. To be incapable of defaming the three treasures is to be free from any concept, compulsion, thought, or intention of separation from Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In the mind of no defaming the three treasures, all beings are aware and awake, free of ignorance and delusion. The precepts are the Dharma, the great reality and the teaching of the great reality. When we wake up, when body and mind drop away, the precepts naturally manifest. No, we're not perfect. We mess up. We repent. We accept the consequences and make amends as best we can. We vow to do better. Then we mess up again, and we do it all over. It's called practice. So, next Sunday, if you feel moved to do so, if you feel ready to practice the precepts, carrying no expectation of attaining and no image of perfection, but just to practice, come to Jukai. Together with all beings, we realize the way.